If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome back, everyone, to the channel. And tonight, I am bringing you 5 terrifying camping stories. Now sit back, relax, dim those lights, and let's get spooky. My friends and I were very into spooky adventures. It was a hobby that originated in our high school years. We started playing with a Ouija board at some cemetery at night. And like addicts looking for a bigger high, we moved on to exploring abandoned buildings that were supposedly haunted. With the exception of a very unsettling atmosphere at most places, we were never in any real danger. That is, until our last adventure. It had been some time since we had the chance to go on any adventures. Once we graduated from high school, some of us moved away for college, others started families, and others simply fell off the face of the earth. A while back, I was contacted by my best friend in high school. And after catching up, he proposed a trip to a national park. Usually this sort of trip would actually be a nice outdoor experience with friends, but Mike had specifically picked the national park for a reason. The disproportionate number of people that go missing there a year. This tidbit of information immediately made me pause. We were all in a way adrenaline junkies. Always looking for that next scare. The difference this time was that we weren't going to explore an abandoned building or play in a graveyard. We were going to visit a place where real people go missing and are never heard from again. Mike, being the silver-tongued devil as always, managed to convince me that we would be safe camping at the park and that a handful of our group had vast experience in the outdoors. Even though I should have made the same decision of hanging up the phone and going back to my daily mundane life, I was out on the road 2 days later and was meeting up with my friends at the Park Visitor Center. The first thing I noticed was the immense beauty of the park. We had not even begun to explore the area, and it was already one of the most breathtaking places I had ever laid my eyes on. The second thing I noticed was the bulletin board next to the parking lot. It was overflowing with missing person posters. While we had begun to unload all of our camping equipment, a park ranger came out of the visitor center's office. He looked tired, like he had not gotten a minute of sleep in the past week, but was trying hard to fake a friendly demeanor. "Hello everyone, what brings you out to our park?" he said in a tired voice. Mike engaged with him in conversation. "We're just here for a camping weekend, sir." The park ranger looked saddened at the words coming out of Mike's mouth. "Yeah, it looks that way. Listen, you folks don't look like the misinformed kind. And I know you've seen our bulletin boards. People have a tendency to go missing in this park, and we are very short on staff. Being I'm the only one on shift. If you insist on camping in this area, don't go too deep into the woods and stay on the paths. If you get lost out here, well, we don't have a good track record of finding nice folk like you." The park ranger didn't really stick around waiting for our reply. He went about his day, and we just went about ours. Our group, composed of 6 people, 3 men and 3 women, walked for a few miles looking for a good camping spot within the woods. I was initially against being so far away from our vehicles until Mike and one of his friends, Alex, pulled out hunting rifles from their bags. If there was anything dangerous in these woods, we would be surely safe, I thought. After a long walk, we found a spot that was perfect for our campsite, and we began setting up our tents. By nightfall, we had multiple tents around a campfire, and we began drinking a few beers and reminiscing about our old high school adventures. Around midnight, Mike had a terrible idea that he had joyfully proposed to the rest of us. "We should try to find some of those missing people out here. Some of them would just be bones by now." Nobody was drunk enough to go exploring the dark woods in search of ghosts, with the exception of Mike and his friend Alex. When the rest of our group inevitably rejected his proposal, he took his hunting rifle, his friend, and Brenda, the woman he was dating, and drunkenly set off for a scary adventure in the woods. As they left, we could no longer hear their steps in the woods. I remember the park ranger's warning, "Stay on the paths," which they most certainly did not do. My worries were validated hours later when they had not returned to the campsite. We tried reaching them on their phones, but we had no service this deep into the woods. After some debate, we decided to head back to the visitor center and get help from the park ranger. Regardless of his previous warnings, we would have a better chance at finding our friends with his help and not go blindly searching in the woods and inevitably getting lost as well. We only took what was necessary with us, some flashlights and the other hunting rifle Alex left at the camp. About 30 minutes into walking back to the visitor center, we noticed something unsettling. All the wildlife around us seemed to go dead quiet. It seemed like our footsteps echoed throughout the woods for miles. From my very limited experience in nature, I could remember that when the woods went quiet, a predator was nearby. Just when I was about to consider the sinister thought, a scream broke the silence.
"Help!"
It sounded like Mike was crying out somewhere not too far from us.
"Help me!"
We started to follow the scream for help, which led us further and further away from the path. A few dozen feet deeper into the woods, we found a flickering flashlight that had been cracked and barely functioning. A few feet in front of us, we could hear Mike.
"Help me!"
Mike sounded weaker this time, but something was off. His voice sounded wrong this time, like someone was trying to imitate how a human spoke and Mike's voice at the same time.
"Mike, are you hurt, buddy?"
I said, concerned but not moving an inch forward until I got a reply.
"Yes, come, help,"
Mike said, maybe 20 feet in front of us. He looked like he was on his knees.
"Where are Alex and Brenda?"
I asked while signaling Josh to ready the rifle he was carrying.
"They're here. We found them."
I pointed my flashlight towards Mike. His body was on his knees. His head was slumped forward, and his shirt was covered in dirt and bathed in blood. I now knew that whatever was talking to us only a few feet in front of us was not Mike. He had been dead for hours.
"They were so damn tasty."
A voice stopped trying to imitate Mike. Mike's head raised to where we could see his lifeless eyes rolling to the back of his head, and somehow, his dislocated jaw was moving by itself, like some sort of demonic ventriloquist dummy show. Something large and grotesque emerged from behind Mike's corpse. It had one of its inhuman hands lodged into the back of Mike's skull, using him as a puppet. It wasted no time to drop on all fours and rush towards us. Josh fired a shot at it and missed. Before our reflexes could kick in, it had crashed into us, throwing Amber and I in different directions, but making sure it got Josh first as he had the biggest threat with the weapon. I landed a few feet from Amber, who had landed badly.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
And broken her leg. I got her up, and we shuffled as fast as Amber could go while the creature ripped chunks off Josh. We made it maybe 50 meters before we were knocked to the ground, and Amber was pulled away into the dark woods, screaming all the way. I got to my feet again, and sprinted faster and further than I had ever gone before. I stopped hearing Amber's wails of pain and knew that thing would catch up to me in a mere matter of moments, no matter how fast the surge of adrenaline would make me run. I fell in the darkness longer than I should. There must have been some cliff that I failed to see. I landed on something hard and soft at the same time. I couldn't see a thing after I dropped my flashlight. I could only smell the terrible, putrid stench of death all around me. I could hear dozens of flies buzzing around me. It had made me freeze in terror. As my vision focused in the darkness, I could see the hundreds of bodies around me. I had fallen into a mass grave. None of the corpses were complete from what I could tell, and some of them I had recognized. Amber and Alex were among the piles of dead, and one particular body I could recognize as the park ranger that we had met in the morning. I had to swallow my scream as a couple more bodies were thrown into the pile. The creature was actively looking through the pile for any signs of me. I had to play dead until the creature left in defeat. I waited for what felt like an eternity until the first rays of light broke through the trees. I felt sick to my stomach as I tried crawling over the dead bodies and out of the pit. I cried for my friends and cried some more when my foot got stuck in one of the bodies. It was Mike, and my foot had gone through where his stomach used to be. Eventually, I crawled out of the mass grave and found my way back to the path we originally used to get to our campsite. A few hours of walking, and I had reached the visitor center where our vehicles awaited our return. I got into my car and fell into a catatonic state for a few minutes. After I snapped out of it, I drove away as the feeling of still being watched was too overwhelming. As I did, I saw a car driving towards the visitor center. A man, a woman, and two young children in the back seat. I wish I could say that I stopped and warned them of the impending doom that awaited them. But I drove. I didn't look back. I remember it very clearly. It was about 20 years ago, back when we lived in Washington. My wife was never the outdoorsy type, so when my son Brandon wanted to go camping, it was always just me and him. That wasn't bad, though. It was good father-son time. It was a nice scenic drive on the way to the campsite. I remember Brandon asked me about the music on the road, and I spent an embarrassingly long time reminiscing about my high school days and what bands I was obsessed with back then. Eventually, we reached our site, and I got to work pitching our tent. Brandon waited patiently. He wasn't the type to go running off or anything. And when it was all set up, me and him went for a hike to take in the nature. It was really peaceful. The woods surrounding the campground were calm and serene. There wasn't any animals out, and about every once in a while I would stop and point out a deer track or some droppings. It reminded me of when I was a kid spending time with my dad. I suppose I was about 9 years old when I learned about the marvels of deer poop myself. As I looked at him, I couldn't help but see a younger version of myself. We had the same eyes, the same hair, and like most of the people in my family, we had the same birthmark on our upper right arm. It was hard spending time with Brandon sometimes. I worked so often and sure, it was putting food on the table. But whenever I saw how fast he was growing without me around, the guilt would start to well up inside me. Seeing him smile and laugh that day really uplifted my spirits, though. I was here now, and that's what mattered. It's what I told myself whenever the conversation lulled. As we were walking, we suddenly found the trail leading out of the woods and into a beautiful view of the river. I was telling Brandon about erosion and how you could see the effects of the previous year's floods on the riverbank, when his expression suddenly changed. He pointed up to the sky and asked, "What's that, Dad?" I looked up myself and found that I was just as confused as he was. There was, off in the distance, a dark triangular-looking object. It hung in the sky perfectly still and then suddenly vanished. Not wanting to lose my reputation as a know-it-all dad, I desperately searched for an explanation before deciding that it must have been a helicopter and telling Brandon as such. He obviously didn't believe me, and frankly, I didn't believe myself either. By the time we got back to our tent, the sun had already started to set. I got Brandon to help me collect some firewood and start up a fire. We roasted some hot dogs and marshmallows. We didn't get to the scary stories, however, as Brandon started nodding off, and I decided it was time for bed. I got Brandon into a sleeping bag and I crawled into mine right next to him. It was the shaking that woke me at first. I had been in an earthquake before, but this was different. It was hard to describe. It was almost like someone was picking up the earth and the earth was trying to pull it back. I was still groggy. I reached out to see if Brandon was awake and I found his sleeping bag empty. I wasn't too panicked yet. Like I said, he wasn't the type to run off, and I always try to keep a level head. I stumbled out of the tent and walked towards where the flashlights were, confident that I would find him near the fire trying to cope with the shaking. Then the lights happened. The whole campground was bathed in a bright, sickly white light. It was blinding at first, and when my vision adjusted, I realized that Brandon was nowhere to be found. This was when I started the panic. I grabbed a flashlight and started shouting his name. As I ran to the edge of the woods surrounding the campsite, I tried looking for the source for the light, but I couldn't see one. As I ran to the edge of the woods, my pounding heart skipped a beat when I heard Brandon's voice. He called out to me.
"Daddy, I'm over here."
I rushed over. My happiness quickly abated when he started crying.
"Help! Something's wrong!"
I ran to the other side of the campground and found him crouched away from me in a little ditch. The shaking had mostly subsided and I rushed over to him. He was facing away from the light and I put my hand on his back.
"What's the matter? Are you hurt?"
I could hear him struggling for air.
"Dad,"
he finally cried.
"Something's wrong. Everything's wrong."
His voice was weak. I reached to his hand, and when I touched it, alarm bells rang in my head. His skin was rubbery and wrinkly, like a Halloween mask. I turned my flashlight on and his whole skin looked a horrid purple.
Brandon?
I muttered in shock. I turned him to face me and screamed. His face was emaciated, his eyes so sunken they looked like a skull's empty sockets. His jaw hanged open like the muscles that held it were torn and worthless. My whole body shook in terror. The shaking started back up again, this time even more violently. It seemed as if the ground was going to get ripped up and thrown into the sky. I didn't know what to do. I grabbed Brandon and held him as close to me as I could. I found myself praying to a god I was never sure actually existed. Through gurgles and moans, Brandon started to talk.
It hurts, Dad. Why does it hurt so much? Help me, Dad.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
As I squeezed him, I could feel him get thinner and thinner, like his insides were being sucked out. It felt like there was nothing left to him. Tears started to roll down my face, and the last thing I heard him say, faint as a whisper, haunted me.
"Why won't you help me, Dad?"
A nudge caused me to bolt up in my sleeping bag. Brandon was prodding me.
"Wake up, Dad, I'm hungry."
I got up, more than a little confused. As my heart stopped racing and I came back to reality, I realized that I had just had a crazy nightmare. I chuckled to myself. After Brandon was fed, I walked over to the ditch from the previous night. There was nothing weird or out of the ordinary. Brandon, too, seemed just like how he was, and didn't mention anything about the previous night. When I walked back to Brandon and asked if he had felt the ground shake, he said he didn't feel a thing. When we got back to civilization, I asked other people the same thing, and they all agreed with Brandon. For a week then, my mind was at ease. I worked a lot again that week, and when I finally had a day off, me and the wife took Brandon to the pool. It was only there that memories of that night came flooding back and the horror with it. When Brandon took off his shirt, I looked at his arm and noticed the family birthmark was missing. I woke up as we hit a particularly rough patch of ground. I'm a second-year college student, and I was on a trip with a few of my friends into the wilderness to go camping. It went about as you would expect, and was overall a fun experience. Dylan was taking us all back home in his van. There was a large patch of wilderness between us and the city outskirts, which was why I had fallen asleep. And that's when I noticed him. Outwardly, there was nothing really off about him. At least not that much. He looked like he could have easily been from our group. But he wasn't. Because five of us had gone on this trip. I did a quick head count, wondering if I was just drowsy, and counted six.
"So, who are you?"
I asked him. It was odd to see someone new here, but the thing was that I guessed he had just picked up a hitchhiker while I had fallen asleep. Lucy gave me a weird look. "You all right there? This here's Grayson, you know him." I turned to him again, wondering if by some odd chance I did know him and reached the same conclusion I had earlier. I had never seen this man before in my life. and again. We had done headcounts regularly, over and over, because Blake wouldn't let us not do them. And it was drilled in my head that it only went up to 5. That's it. 5. Not 6. And we did this over and over so often, there was no way I could be making a mistake. I opened my phone and went through the pictures I had taken during the trip. No. There was not even a single sight of him at the edge of any frame, let alone a full-blown photo of him. And the most people in any photograph was still 5. I turned to Lucy and said, "What's with this weird joke?" "What weird joke?" she asked. "Why did you pick someone up? And why are you pretending like he's always been here?" Lucy wasn't really one to joke, but I guess this could have been part of an elaborate prank. Lucy frowned. "Who are you talking about?" "Grayson," I hissed as softly as I could. "I know he wasn't here with us before." "What are you talking about?" Lucy said. "He was here with us the whole trip." Frustrated, I tapped Blake on the shoulder. "Hey, Blake, why don't you do another headcount?"
Buzz off.
"I'm serious," I said.
"All right, 1, 2, 3, 4,
that was my number.
5, came from Lucy. 6, Grayson said.
I glared at him again. I knew I wasn't mistaken. Dylan was driving, but he was the most reliable member of the group. So I tapped him on the shoulder.
"What's happened, mate?"
"What's the deal with Grayson? Did we pick him up?" Dylan frowned.
"Bro, he's always been here with us. What are you talking about?"
"Okay, no. They were definitely gaslighting me." Blake actually seemed to remember something.
"Hey, yeah. Grayson's always been here with us, hasn't he? We both went into the bush together, I remember."
I frowned as it sounded like he was saying something, but then I turned to see Grayson's reaction to this. He hadn't said a single word at all. He was just staring out the window, as if he didn't have a care in the world. He then turned very abruptly and told Dylan,
"Hey, can we stop here? I need to take a leak."
"Again?" Dylan said. But he had stopped the van anyway. Grayson got out, and I saw him turn towards the woods.
"Maybe he just has an overactive bladder," Blake said.
"Wait, you're telling me that you stopped before?"
"Oh yeah, wait, you were asleep, right?"
"Yeah, I had to go into the woods, and Dylan had to go too," Blake said. I think I began to understand what had happened. I had fallen asleep, and Blake went out into the woods, so they stopped. But then Blake came back with Grayson at that time, and everyone apparently accepted them?
"Oh yeah, you guys were gone for a long time," Lucy said.
My heart started racing as time dragged on. It soon became 10 minutes since Grayson had left us.
"Should we go and
Dylan got no further as a howl erupted from the woods around us. It didn't sound like anything I had ever heard before. Rather, a mixture between a grown wolf's and a human infant cry. And there were more of them.
Guys, Lucy said, pointing to a point in the woods where I could make out a pair of orange eyes looking at us before they disappeared so quickly, I wondered if it had just been a mirage.
"Dylan, let's go. We can't leave Grayson behind. Grayson's the one who's probably brought those things to us," I said. "How come you guys can't see that?" Other strange, shadowy figures were there just behind the tree line. I had a feeling that they weren't going to remain behind the tree line for long.
"Dylan, floor it!"
This time it was Lucy who screamed,
and Dylan started the van. Behind us, I could hear the same strange screams we had heard earlier. We didn't get very far as Dylan stopped. "What happened?" Blake asked.
"I don't know," Dylan said.
I got out, against my better judgment, and saw that both of our rear end tires had been slashed.
"Grayson, that snake."
And then I saw it, coming from the trees. A creature that looked almost humanoid but had a wolf's head. No, I think it was wearing a wolf pelt. It let out a scream and I dashed back inside.
"What happened?"
Dylan asked.
"That thing you guys let join us slashed both of our tires," I said.
The cries grew louder around us, and more of the same figures came out onto the road. I'm typing this as fast as I can on my phone. I have no idea what those things are, but they look like they're ready to tear us to pieces. Lucy's a sobbing mess next to me. And to be honest, if it wasn't her, it would likely have been me. But I'm trying to hide how scared I am right now. Won't lie though, I think the end is near for us. We can't drive any further. Any bright ideas on what our next move should be? So, this happened not so late ago, maybe a few days. My name is Carl, and I had this trip planned for 3 weeks. Me and my friends got on the meeting point and got into the car to finally start the trip we had always wanted. It was me, Josh, Carla, and Mark, and luckily they had made sure to bring as much camping supplies for this as they could, given that we believed it was better to be safe than sorry. It was a long 2-hour drive until we reached our destination. I think it was called Marshland Campground, or something. I didn't really pay much attention to the sign since I wasn't the one driving. After we reached a good location, we got our things unloaded and started setting up camp. First our tents, and then some other things like parking the car on a better position, and then gathering things for the campfire. As we finished and sat down to talk, a park ranger showed up from a nearby trail. He looked like your average park ranger, and with his grumpy voice spoke to us.
"Hey, kiddos. I know you're all settled down to camp and all, but I gotta tell you that some places are off limits. There's signs and all that crap saying it, so take my word and don't venture off."
Of course, some pretty standard stuff. Maybe some preservation areas where visitors were not allowed the camper visit. After he walked away, we continued the chat like nothing happened. After a bit of talking, we decided to hike on the trail and see if there was any place to visit, like a souvenir shop or a local shop. As we went, we saw some parts that were boarded up with tall metal frames and electric fences. Upon a closer look, there were signs like the ranger had said. It read, "Stay off, dangerous wildlife in the area," along with symbols of different animals like wolves, foxes, spiders, bears, and something I couldn't make off. It looked like a quadrupedal animal of sorts that I didn't know about. Me and Josh joked about them keeping monsters hidden in the forest getting a laugh together. As the night fell early, it started to rain heavily, probably a storm. So we rushed into our tents, and since the group wasn't sleepy just yet, we kept chatting through our phones since signal was still present. We heard some loud sounds outside, and we went to investigate. It was coming from far away from our camp. Maybe a vehicle? We got on our raincoats and flashlights. Josh also got us some hunting knives just in case, along with bear spray. We tried to locate the source of the sound, and as we hid in the bushes, we saw some staff opening a huge gate inside the prohibited area as they sent animals like cows and pigs inside. Of course, this was already sketchy enough, but we couldn't exactly assume what they were doing. But the next thing we heard was the sound of said animals apparently running around. The sound of shock as a few of them ended up running up to the electrical fences. We wanted to run away, but curiosity got the best of us as we stayed hidden to watch it all. We saw the light post that illuminated the trail starting to flicker, and soon the place was dark save for the headlights of the truck. Lightning striked everywhere so often, and we saw something move in the prohibited area. It was quadrupedal, had a muscular back, and if I could guess, was around the size of a large horse. But that's all we could see. Soon, a deafening roar echoed around as the side of the metal clank started being heard. If that couldn't be worse, we also heard the staff screaming. We saw faintly one trying to get into the truck before being pulled back by something. It was impossible to see, but definitely a gruesome horror show. We saw a lit-up flashlight illuminating in one direction, and that's when we saw it. Quadrupedal, a long body, probably 25 or more feet in length, definitely carnivore, 6 eyes and 2 tails. What the hell is that thing? Was all I could think of upon seeing that beast, and its snout bloody with someone's arm still hanging in its mouth. Another lightning struck, and we could see for a moment that it tore its way through the metal frames and fence. So the moment the light posts were off, it wasn't just a flicker. It was a full power outage, and this it could get through the electrical fence without problems. We had to escape. We had knives, but it probably wouldn't do anything to it. But there was no way we could escape given it was still around. Then it saw us. We had no option but to run inside the prohibited area as it took some time to turn. We ran as fast as we could go, and not even seeing where we were heading to, we just wanted to escape. I faintly kept hearing its roars as it rushed through the foliage hunting us. Eventually, we almost got to hide, almost, except for Mark, who tripped and we couldn't save him. We only kept running as it got a hold of him, and his screams echoed in our minds as we tried to hide in the foliage. We hid inside some large bushes, hoping that it wouldn't see us. After waiting for what felt like an eternity, we decided to get out and make our way to the car. As we were about to turn it on, we heard cackling sounds, and when we looked back, it was staring at us from outside. The moment we sped away, it gave chase, somehow keeping up with the car. Then it slammed itself into the car, causing us to spin over and crash in the side of the road. Now we are in the worst situation. We're face to face with it. I didn't even know what we could do other than hold my knife and pray that it would go away. Then a small tremor was felt, and I looked to the side, and a bigger one similar to it showed up, leading it away. The horror struck upon us, realizing the horrible truth. It was a juvenile, and it wasn't an individual, but a species. Live in Eastern Tennessee. Great cost of living, access to mountains, streams, trails, rivers, and lakes. Involved in literally all things outdoors. 30-year-old male with thousands of hiking hours, miles logged, and campsites stayed at. This was a unique and weird experience that I genuinely can't explain.
huge snowstorm about to blow in from golf. No one else should be on the trails. It's just me and my friend. Let's call him Joe due to the nature of his job. We just happened to have the same days off and decided to do some deep winter camping towards Middle Eastern Divide line of Tennessee. Remember, I have camped, fished, climbed, caved, and grew up in these hills and valleys. I know what to expect from weather all the way to animal life, etc. 2 days before we were supposed to get a huge snowstorm, we decided to have an easy hike in and an easy hike out to avoid the worst of the weather. The hike in was beautiful. No bugs, no tourists, no rangers. Just me and Joe walking and talking. This trail is absolutely cake. Almost no elevation gain and just cruising. We set up camp in a valley, stream running beside us. Firewood is scarce, so while Joe heads up to the valley to take photos of the sunset, I want to get a fire going. So I start dragging and chopping the downfall. Used all the wood near camp, so I started hiking up the valley to find bigger logs, and came across something odd. A small rock tablet. Absolutely square and tucked into the base of a tree. No writing. Nothing too odd about it. But it gave me a sense of dread seeing it. Like when you see a sharp knife in something's hand or someone suddenly holding a gun. Just a tension in the air. I move on and realize we are probably good for firewood. The night goes on and we make dinner. Laugh and tell stories about our year. I forget about the weird tablet thing. Another family actually hikes in after dark, which was odd. Father and son. They set up camp and start their own fire. Cold night, so we turn in earlier than normal. Zip up the tent and sleeping bag. Call out the Joe goodnight and try to sleep. I had some terrible freeze-dried food, and being 30, well, acid reflux isn't fun. I tossed and turned a lot and couldn't sleep. Bone-conducing headphones and listening to hardcore history. And then I heard something screech. Muffled, but close enough to get through the sound of my podcast. I ripped my headphones off, and this time it was clear. It was loud. Like the sound was clear, more clear than anything else I had heard. And it was absolutely terrifying. I froze in place, my whole body immediately in a cold sweat. I heard the kid just down the hill trying to wake up his dad and ask what that noise was, but he never got a response. He must have done what I did and realized he needed not to move. He wasn't brave enough to ask again as the screech happened again, and I squeezed my eyes shut, hoping that whatever it was didn't know we were there. I heard all manner of wildlife. This wasn't nature or any bobcat, mountain lion, elk, etc. I have heard them all. Then I heard it moving, well, maybe walking towards camp from the ridge above us. I had been flurrying all night, and I could hear snow and leaves crunching as it came closer. But then it stopped. I held my breath and tried not to move a muscle. It then walked away, back up the hill. I let out a light breath and whispered out to Joe. "Joe, what the hell was that? Did you hear that holy shit?" I had roughly said. And from the side of the hill opposite of me, the side that thing walked down. "I don't know, Chris. Get some rest and we'll talk tomorrow." In Joe's voice. Perfectly Joe's voice. His inflection and all. I almost got up and ran, but I felt like if I did, I would die. I don't know how else to describe it. It felt like doom. I laid there for hours. It felt like that night wouldn't ever end. I never heard it again, and eventually exhaustion got me. My eyes couldn't stay open any longer, and I dozed for what had to be less than 5 minutes. I woke up panicked, reaching for my phone, wood hatchet. I heard it frickin' sprinting away from my tent, back up the hill, long strides, bounding almost. I sat there till dawn with my hatchet in my hands. Joe was up first. I heard his tent unzip. Whoa, it snowed a little last night. I unzipped just as fast, and to my horror, tracks led up the valley. Tracks I had never seen before. Bipedal. Round indentions on the balls of the feet with three other round indentions for toes. We could only find one intact track. All the others looked like they had been scraped over with the hand or broom. It was still snowing, so we got covered up too quickly, and both of our phones had gotten the power sucked out overnight. Joe didn't believe me, but on the way out of camp, the kid across from me locked eyes with me, and I could tell he heard it too. Tears welling up in his eyes, and he begged his dad to leave. We hiked out in awkward silence. I walked into a gas station halfway home and the stress bled off me, tears filling my eyes too. I had never been so scared in all my years of outdoor adrenaline rushes. Turns out local lore says there's a screamer that roams the area. Me and Joe haven't talked since.